Thanks, Adam. Evening to everybody. And we're welcome to those of you who may be our guests here tonight. We thank you very much for coming to be with us. I hope this will be the beginning of a good, busy week in the Lord's service for everybody. We have a lot of things to do over the next several days, and some of you be getting ready for the family camp time. There'll be the special meal I read about on Wednesday evening. Remember our class on heaven Wednesday night. And we have visits to make and know your Bible courses to grade and youth activities to attend to. So we appreciate everybody's involvement very, very much. I was thinking as I rode over here this evening about our study this morning and then the news I've watched this afternoon. And I wondered to myself if I had known at that time what happened at the Bennett Chapel Church of Christ in Antioch, Tennessee today, if I would have read that passage we studied this morning any differently, or if I would have realized how timely those thoughts are. And I ask you to remember those folks over there in your prayers, and take the front of the bulletin, the article there, and the passage we studied this morning, and the news, and put them all together and make use of them. Tonight, one of our questions for this year that I was hoping that we could think about is this one here. It's a pretty basic question. What do you want? The tones of voice in which that question can be asked make a lot of difference, and the circumstances in which it may be asked make a lot of difference. Maybe some of you have had it asked of you driving off the parking lot towards some pre-arranged meeting at some eating establishment of some sort. What do you feel like for lunch today? Or maybe you have it once you're seated and the server comes to you and you have the menu there and they say, "What could I get you? What do you want?" And you have a variety of possible answers, either you can order what you did last time, you can have what whoever is there with you orders, and you can just have the same thing. You can look to see what is the first picture on the list or something like that. That's one thing if we do that kind of thinking with something as simple as that. But with our lives and with our souls, this becomes a very, very meaningful question. I'd like to read a passage from Mark chapter 10. And in this passage, in verse 36 and verse 51, Jesus raises this question. And in the English versions, at least, it will be phrased either what wilt thou, or something like that. In this version, it's simply, what do you want? And as far as I can find, these two occasions are the times when Jesus raises that question and this question in that way. He asked the lame man before he helped him, do you want to be made well? But in this case, he just says, what do you want? Notice as we read, verse 35 beginning, and James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came up to him and said to him, Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. And he said to them, What do you want me to do for you? And they said to him, Grant us to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory. Jesus said to them, You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink or to be baptized with the baptism with which I'm baptized? And they said to him, we are able. Jesus said to them, the cup that I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism with which I'm baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it's for those for whom it has been prepared. And the other parallel accounts of this say, those for whom the Father has prepared it. And when the ten heard it, they began to be indignant at James and John. And Jesus called them to him and said to them, you know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But it shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. And they came to Jericho, and as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples, a great crowd, Bartimaeus, a blind beggar, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. And many rebuked him, telling him to be silent, but he cried out all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stopped and said, call him. And they called the blind man, saying to him, take heart, get up, he's calling you. And throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, what do you want me to do for you? And the blind man said to him, Rabbi, let me recover my sight. And Jesus said to him, go your way. Your faith has made you well. And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him on the way. Now you notice the two questions that are there. I don't believe, as I think about this, that it's an accident that the two questions come up in the settings they do here. I think that's a part of the lesson the Lord communicates to us. And I'd like for us to think of why Jesus uses this question as his teaching tool throughout this passage and these two episodes. And there are, I've just chosen four or five ideas that seem to me to be really important in this passage. First off, it is thought-provoking that what we want is something about us that the Lord takes great interest in. It's not what we can do necessarily, but what we want. It's not what we've done already as much as what we want. It's not who we are or where our family's from or what we've been through as much as it is what we want, where we're headed, what our heart is set on, what's our direction in life, where do we aim to go in our journey. There are several indications of how important this is to the Lord in the Bible. One of them I noticed from 1 Chronicles 28, and I think it's in verse 2, where David is toward the end of his life, and he calls the people together and Solomon and so forth, and he tells them, I had it in my heart to build a house for the ark of God. And then he tells how God told him, no, I'll build you a house. And David goes ahead to charge Solomon to follow through with the thing that he's made preparation for, that David is making preparation for in building the temple. But it starts with what the man wants. I had it in my heart. And if you think over, you think as we go along, and when Jesus comes, the Son of David, of course, and begins to teach, most of us consider his instruction in the Sermon on the Mount to be the highest of ethical teaching that ever has been. But in it, what Jesus dwells on most is what his disciples want in their lives. In Matthew 6 and verse 21, remember, he tells them, he's encouraging them to lay up treasures in heaven, and he tells them that where your treasure is, your heart's going to be also. And when he says that, don't you get the impression that their hearts are what he really is interested in? He's concerned with what their aspirations are, what they're aiming for in their lives. Nothing is more important than that. And remember that when Matthew 6 ends, it's with Jesus telling his disciples to seek first the kingdom of heaven and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to them. When Jesus has established the church, and when people who are in Christ are having to learn to live for him over the long haul, Paul writes to the church at Colossians 3 and verse 2, to tell his brothers and sisters to set their minds on things above. King James says, set your affections on things above, and not on things on the earth, not on things that are going to pass away, not on things that can't possibly last. What do you want? That's what Jesus is interested in first, because he knows that what we do is ultimately going to come along after what we want. And the gospel is, among many things, it's a challenge to us to answer the question of what we want in the way the Lord is teaching us to in the passages we've mentioned. Of all the things Jesus is interested in me, he's interested in what I want. And I have to be able to say that. Secondly, what we want is what really brings the costs in our lives that we'll have to be willing to bear. It's interesting to look at James and John here. In Matthew's account, really, it's interesting that the mother of these two men comes to Jesus and asks him to grant what is desired. But in Matthew's account, when he answers her request, he speaks to not to her, but to the two men. And both Jesus and the other disciples have the clear impression that these two fellows have sent their mother to ask for what they believe to be the two most honored places in the anticipated kingdom of the Lord. And Jesus' answer to them is, you don't know what you're asking. And are you able to drink the cup that I'm... Are you able to be baptized with it? The cup represented maybe the penalty of death, and then the suffering involved. To be baptized in something is to be immersed in it, to be completely submerged in suffering that Jesus would go through. And in verse 45, there's one of the earliest of all of Jesus' statements to his disciples that he's going to be giving his life as a ransom for all. And if you want the right hand and the left hand of that, do you realize? I wonder if Jesus already knew there'd be one guy on a cross over here and another cross over here when he suffered. And I wonder if in his mind, as he answered James and John, he has that in his mind. Anyway, it turns out that in Acts 12 and verse 2, James is the first one of the apostles who is killed. He gets killed by Herod Agrippa, remember, out of an act of political expediency. And remember then that James, the other one of these men, is apparently the one of the apostles who lived to be the oldest. But in Revelation 1, in verse 9, we find out that he's on the Isle of Patmos, a slave island or prison island for the Word of God and the testimony of Jesus, and that he's their brother in the tribulation and in patient endurance that they're having to go through. So in different ways, these two did drink the cup and were baptized with the baptism of Jesus, but started with what they thought they wanted. And you and I can think of our own lives and think of the times when we got what we wanted and ask ourselves what the price of that really turned out to be, and whether we knew it would be that way at the time. It might be good for us as we look forward to think of what the desired goal in our lives, what we want, what that will take, what that will require, what that will involve over time. And I think that's an important part of this lesson. Number three, what we want is an important means of understanding ourselves and of relating to others. In recent years, there have been all kinds of books written about leadership issues, and a lot of you work in fields where if you're in any kind of leadership situation, we went through the time where we had to write down our vision. Remember that? Have a vision statement to be able to say in one sentence what it is that you want in your life. And that's a way of remembering who we are and what our efforts are about and what it is we're trying to do and whether then all of our activities are going to have anything to do really with that purpose in our lives, that purpose statement. In this case, there are two things that happen that are striking in this passage. When Jesus asked James and John, "What do you want me to do for you?" And then he takes them with him, and he spends whatever time he spends in Jericho, and he goes toward Jerusalem, toward the cross. As he's leaving Jericho, now then the blind man who had been begging at the other edge of the city is now over here as if to meet Jesus on purpose. And when that man finally stops the crowd and is the focus of attention, notice that Jesus asked him exactly the same question. What do you want me to do for you? Could it be that was partly to help Bartimaeus and partly to get James and John and the other disciples to consider how what they wanted compared to what this man wanted? You know, Jesus was not asking Bartimaeus, the blind man, "What do you want me to do for you?" because it wasn't obvious. He wanted it to be thought about. He wanted his people to consider how their aims and ambitions really looked out in the light of day. That's an impact. For us, The one good way for us to know ourselves is to really figure out what we want, what it is we want in our lives. And then notice how this affected relationships. With the other 10, they find out what James and John have tried to do here. To kind of get around where they can get ahead of the others. How did the other 10 feel about it? The problem is, they apparently wanted the same seats. So they're indignant now over this. When what we want is not compatible with what the other people of God need, then relationships struggle. And that's what happens in this passage here. Healthy wants are those which can be for the good of all of us and which can pull us together in that way. A lot of times when there are relationship problems, either in families or in congregations or any other team situations, it's because there's not the shared desires, the shared aims, the shared ambitions. There need to be some of those that draw us together. What do we want? The most basic, we want God to be glorified. That would be the most basic thing. And we want to be in heaven. That's what we want. That's our major ambition. Number four, what we want is the main issue that determines whether we stay with something. These disciples are going to have to want something that will cause them to stay with Jesus whenever he is serving and not commanding, and when he's giving his life a ransom for them. It's one thing to want to be with him when he's an amazing teacher and a powerful worker of wonders, but when he's serving, when he's giving, when he is dying and suffering, we want to be with him then. And whether that's what we want determines whether we're going to stay with following him, even when it's not the easy or the fun thing to do at that moment. There are many other joys, but not everything is easy. And then with Bartimaeus, you notice here that he positions himself so that when Jesus and the crowd comes by, he's able to start crying out to Jesus to have mercy on him. But what happened? Doesn't say just a person or two ignored him. It says many rebuked him, telling him to be silent. What did he do? He cried out the more, "Have mercy on me." Notice that he confesses Jesus as the Son of David. That's to say the Christ, the King. "Have mercy on me." And Jesus finally stopped and has them to bring Bartimaeus to him, actually tells him to call him. And I like the picture when they tell him, you take heart and get up, he's calling you. And he throws off the cloak and he gets up and he comes to Jesus. He has kept on, in other words. Why? Because when Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" the man could say, "I want my sight. I've heard that you are someone who can make people see." And because he knew what he wanted, he kept on, and he wouldn't be easily deterred from calling out for the mercy that he required. I believe, by the way, the reason that Mark can refer to Bartimaeus like this is that he stayed a follower of Jesus, and the people who received this letter or this gospel knew of him. In Matthew's account, there are two blind men. Mark doesn't mention one of them because Bartimaeus is here, you see. And then number five, what we want is something that opens us up to the Lord's mercies. And I think he treated James and John that way, with mercy. They didn't know what they were asking. Jesus understood that, but he still treated them kindly. He doesn't ridicule them or make fun of them or reject them. He teaches them. And then with Bartimaeus, "Have mercy on me, have mercy on me. Let me recover my sight." And Jesus says, "Go your way. Your faith has made you well." And immediately he receives his sight and he follows him on the way. On the way to where? On the way to Jerusalem. The Lord has blessed him because of what he wanted and because he believed Jesus could grant it to him. One of the verses in the New Testament that I'm grateful for is 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 12. It happens to be in a passage where Paul is writing about giving and about generosity in that way. But he says to them, if the readiness is there, in other words, my paraphrase, if the want to is there, it's acceptable according to what a man has and not according to what he doesn't have. The Lord's knowledge or his interest in what we want enables him to consider our intentions and our motives and to understand what we're desiring to do for him, and then to let that be taken into account as he deals with our humanness and the weakness of all of that. Well, what do you want? The Lord's interested in it. It will chart the course of your life. It will have to do with who you become and how you relate. It will determine what you stay with as opposed to a passing interest, and it'll let the Lord have mercy on you in your life. I hope that we'll stop and consider that the Lord takes this into account when he gives us what we need through the gospel. If you want to follow Christ and to be a child of God, a citizen of his kingdom, then say so. Let that desire bring a turnaround in your affections. Be baptized into Christ and walk in the light. And if you have that desire tonight, if that's what you want, then we'd love to help you in that way if you'll let us know by coming while we stand and sing.